You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
Couple of beeps in there. I think those were some pretty happy Manchester United fans. By the way, they're happy as Liverpool fans over at the Gorgeous Gael. If you want an Irish pub with an Irish feel, the Gorgeous Gael is the place for you. Soccer fans, head over to the Gorgeous Gael. 5555 Morningside. Catch all the best soccer and football matches there. Stop in for a pint and a bite. Whiskey offerings, excellent. Say hello to my good friend Peter over there. They have a real open feel there, a lot of monitors. We've done a couple of live shows there as well. Outdoor patio, the Gorgeous Gael, the place to be, thegorgeousgael.com. And by the way, Jan, I think they put on a Danish league game for you there.
Oh, yesterday they put on the Danish FA Cup final, man.
Danish Cup final.
Between FC Copenhagen and Brøndby.
Excuse me.
Yes, Danish Cup final. 40,000.
Danish football, you got to be careful around
here. 40,000 people, 10 yellow cards, 3-1 game. I mean, I would have watched that 10 times more than Man U and Ajax. You know?
Did you guys catch the short video of the Brøndby fans, like in a park, absolutely going for it? It was unbelievable. Like, it was fun to see.
How many Danes are in Houston?
We're probably about 400, I would say, yeah. 400. Yeah. So we have a Danish club in Houston, and the Danish club had arranged the game to be shown on stream down there at the Gorgeous Gael, which was wonderful.
Excellent. Yeah. All right, remind us again about your sale this weekend, Danish Inspirations Memorial Contemporary
Weekend
Furniture.
Sale at danishinspirations.com. Come to 2775-400, and I guarantee you'll be pleasantly surprised with a lot of good stuff.
Stressless. Sectional couches.
Leather sectional, dining room, bedroom, office furniture. Man, everything that a man could want, that a soccer fan could want, I would say.
For the man cave.
For the man cave, yeah. That's right.
Notable games coming up. By the way, Miguel Herrera is now the coach of Club America again, so that's pretty interesting from Tijuana. June 3rd, Juventus-Real Madrid, the UEFA Champions League final coming up. You got also on that day, Bruce Arena, the United States, will play Venezuela, a warm-up for their World Cup qualifiers, which will occur between the 8th of June and the 13th.
How about the U-20 Venezuelan team, huh? It's undefeated, huh?
Yeah, I called them last night. It's a pretty interesting it's an interesting team. They have a four-set that can attack. They spent a year and a half in intense training. They played 30 games. The coach is Rafael Dudamel, who is also the senior coach, which, by the way, is not going to the World Cup in Russia. So they've focused all this attention on the Venezuelan under-20s. So pretty interesting. Ken, did you see anything around the U.S.? Because the U.S. played a spectacular game against Senegal.
I saw the opening goal. I thought the turn was great and the finish was great. I didn't see anything else. I didn't get a chance to see the game.
It's one of the better under-20 teams talent-wise, yes. I think I've seen. It leads to a lot of hope and promise. And there's also a lot of guys that are not there. But they had a midfield of Tyler Adams of the New York Red Bulls. This kid, Eric Williamson, whose property at DC United, plays at Maryland. And then the kid from Philadelphia, and I can't his name's escaping me right now, who actually changed the tournament for them. But I'll tell you what.
And Sargent, the high school kid.
And then a 17-year-old was their goal scorer, who's being looked at by Werder Bremen and Schalke. So
he's hot at the moment, too, isn't he?
Yeah. So it was pretty interesting. All right, let's switch gears. Champions League final. Let's talk a little bit about Real Madrid and Juventus. And some of the things that jump out to you, and I'll start with you, Ken. We'll go to you, Eddie, and then we'll go to you, Jan. What jumps out to you about this matchup in particular?
Well, I think hopefully it will be a great final. I think a contrast in styles, you know, and I think styles make games sometimes too. I like Juventus, even though I think they're not the favourite. I think Real Madrid will certainly be the favourite for this final. But I like Juventus. I think they're solid. Yeah, you know, they're solid defensively, Buffon in goal, tight defence. They never lost a game, I think, in qualifying. I may be correct, but I don't think they lost a game, did they?
Don't give up a lot of goals. No.
I think they haven't lost in nine. And they won the domestic league, they won the domestic cup, and they're going for the triple. So I think they've got some great momentum in their favour, and I fancy them. I think they might turn Real Madrid over.
Eddie?
What stands out for me is, for as high as Zinedine Zidane has been on Gareth Bale throughout this year, I think he's going to pick Isco to start. And I think that he should. Isco's been unbelievable. And I think that if he does pick Bale, and listen, Bale's not, he's not a crap player by any stretch of the imagination. But if I'm Isco, I'm thinking to myself, Zidane, get me out of here. You don't respect me. You don't appreciate my skills. I think that I think it's going to be 1-1 at halftime. I think that Juventus is going to score early in the second half. And I think that Real Madrid is going to push so hard to get the equalizer that Juventus is going to score late and win 3-1. I think Juventus defensively, as you mentioned, Ken, is they're too strong, even with Cristiano Ronaldo. And how, I mean, he's been on fire. I mean, this kid's been, every time someone criticizes him and he reads about it, he sticks it right up there, you know what. I mean, hey, you think I'm too old? You think I'm not fast? You think I'm not as good as I used to be? I'm going to score a hat trick. Well, what do you think about that?
It is remarkable how he has changed his game now.
I just don't think he's going to hear my criticism, so I'm picking you.
But he has changed his game now, and he's a striker that can play in all the different channels now. But he's not picking a ball up by the touchline and running at people as much as he once did. He's more of like a little bit more of a number nine, isn't he?
But it's not more of a maturity in his game. Don't you think he's matured as a player now? He's playing mature soccer. He's effective. He was always brilliant technically and great skill and stuff. But I think his decision making now, I think he brings other players into the game more. I just see much more of a maturity in his game.
It's almost like at times he's made a deal with the devil. He turns every half chance into a goal. The full chances, yes, he scores, but every single half chance he has, he scores.
Who's sharper than him in the penalty area, Jan? I mean,
Higuain.
Maybe. Hopefully in the final. Higuain has been.
He's sharper to the rigatoni and the pasta. I know that one.
I think Higuain has been amazing this year.
Not if you asked Juventus fans a couple weeks ago.
Oh, that's right.
Whatever.
But. This is the beauty for me of Juventus. Guys like Higuain and Mandzukic, who have been totally selfless, right? They've totally altered their roles. Mandzukic had to play as a wide midfielder. He's a center forward.
Did you read the quote from Dybala today?
Tell me.
He's working on his right foot, right? His right foot is not. He says every day he picks up a pencil with his right, not his hand, his foot, and tries to write with it. He's trying to work on his right foot. I thought that was pretty good.
Got to love that. By the way, the stadium's going to be closed in Cardiff for security reasons, so they're worried about a drone dropping some kind of bomb in there or something. So your thoughts on it, because I know you got a Juventus T-shirt on, so I'm kind of figuring you're going the Juventus way.
You know, I've been a Juventus fan since many, many years, and I believe that Juventus is one of the best well-managed club in Europe, you know, and even they had the scandal, so-called scandal, remember, that was all dropped, you know, and they got their titles back, and they sued the Italian government for $500 million, and they dropped the suit so they could get their titles back. So, and actually, Juventus in Latin means youth, and I think Dani Alves has found his youth in Juventus. He has been playing absolutely stunningly football. His assists and his goals has been he's pushed out
of Barcelona.
Yes, amazing. And I think Higuain knows Real Madrid so well because, as you know, he played there. And Alves knows Real Madrid well. And their defense, I judge that their defense is going to make the difference. So I'm 2-1. I'm 2-1 Juventus.
That's Buffon has the edge over Keylor Navas. Goalkeeping could be the difference on the day. Does he have the edge?
I would say so. Yeah. I would say, especially with that defense in front of him too, Glenn. I think it's a tight defense. You know, they've been rock solid. So
sentimental. Is there a sentimental feeling that people want to see Buffon win this? Possibly outside of Real Madrid fans, general fans.
Yeah, I would have said so.
You think so?
I think so.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back more Champions League talk. 713-780-3776. As we go to break, I've got two tickets to the Heineken Champions League final party in Houston. It's at 813 St. Emmanuel at the Warehouse Live. Again, it's June 3rd, 1:45 p.m. You've got Steve Nichol, who won it, played in two European Cup finals in a row before it was renamed the Champions League. And we're gonna run Steve's interview later on, but that horrific day where Fans were killed, and they actually made Liverpool go out and play against Juventus after that for some ungodly reason. We'll take a break here. More of the Best in Soccer Talk. Sixth caller right now. You got a pair of tickets to the Heineken Champions League final party here in Houston at 713-780-3776.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
Oh, it's helped on beautifully. De La Torre squares it back. Sargent off the turn has scored. Spectacular goal for the United States. The 17-year-old has done it again. They are up 1-0 on Senegal. It is a thing of beauty.
That was a big win for the United States, 1-0. So they'll close out their group play against Saudi Arabia. But Tab Ramos has the United States playing well. And like in any tournament, they had some adversity in the first game. They built off it. They corrected things. He stuck with a couple of players that had very rough starts in that opener against Ecuador, which ended in a 3-3 draw. And those players, Herrera especially, one of the outside backs. And everybody's talking about Cameron Carter-Vickers of Spurs at the center back position along with Eric Palmer-Brown. But I'll tell you what, the two outside backs made it comfortable for the center backs because nobody turned the corner on the two outside backs. So nobody's really mentioning them, but I think we need to give them a little bit of a boost. All right, let's go back to the Champions League. In studio, Ken Fogarty, Eddie Robinson, Jan Christensen. Let's go back to the Champions League final. Say what you want. Ronaldo always lives up to it in the big games. I mean, pretty much 90% of the time, he's a big game player.
This year especially, I think, has been more effective than ever. He's been dynamite. He's finishing. He's always a threat. You know, I mean, obviously, he's the big card in the final, you know, and a major concern to Juventus as well. But I think that, as Jan said, Bale has had a, not for me, a really effective season, Gareth Bale. And so I think they're pretty much, is it fair to say they're just like just the 1-4? If Juventus can take care of Ronaldo, does that negate Real Madrid's offensive threats then? You know, but unless he brings in an Esco.
I'm saying Isco and Benzema. Yeah. Golly, but for me, I think he's not quiet, especially recently, but Casemiro, the way he's played in the midfield, the way he's dominated defensively, he commits fouls that are timely, that are hard, but somehow manages to stay on the field and not get sent off, whether it's a straight red or two yellows. I think that if he's aggressive, that if he's strong, that if he asserts his will in that midfield, that's going to give, for me, Real Madrid a nice advantage.
Plus Modric in there as well. I think he's a very effective player.
Absolutely.
Modric and Kroos, do we talk about them?
Not enough.
All right, let's go quickly to the phone line to Caesar. Caesar, what's on your mind tonight, Caesar? You can join in the conversation.
Hey, how's it going, Glenn? How's it going, guys? Let's talk about very quick about how good Venezuela's been playing in this U-20 World Cup, scoring 10 goals and not allowing one.
Yeah.
With a shocking victory against Germany and then especially Mexico, too.
Are you Venezuelan or just a fan of that team?
I am Venezuelan. And I'm also wanted to talk about the Champions League. You know, I'm excited. You know, of course, big Real Madrid supporter right here.
All right.
Part of the Real Madrid Houston Pena group support here in Houston. We got about like 70 people, and we're excited to watch the Champions
League. Where are you guys watching the final?
We got the Atlas Pub on Washington. We're supposed to, looks like we're going to have a pretty good group. We're looking about 200 people.
Wow.
Trying to get more people to come, but yeah.
Caesar, who starts, Bale or Isco?
Isco starts. Bale comes off the bench, I think, around the 70th minute. I wouldn't want to risk it. I remember 2014 when Costa got injured, and they started him, and then he ended up getting hurt within the next first 10 minutes, and I think cost him the final.
What's your biggest fear as a Real Madrid fan with Juventus?
The defense, that back line.
How good they are defensively?
How good they don't leak goals. They've had a leak goal, I think, in over like 600 minutes, I think. Mm-hmm. But you know, I have this feeling, Ronaldo, the way Zidane has rested them the last half of the season, scoring five against Bayern.
Yeah, but he's got to get back from the British Virgin Islands because he's down there depositing some of his money. He's got to get back in time for the game, doesn't he?
Yeah. But you know, he'll always be ready for finals.
I think him and Lionel Messi might have went down there together.
I think they party too much.
I think they're stashing some cash in the BVI. That's what I think. They got busted for it. They're not going to go to jail, but
they're not going to go to jail.
They both got caught. All right, Caesar. Thank you very much. And listen, if he doesn't make it back from the BVI, I would have to say it's Juventus in a landslide.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, you guys take care. Have a good one. Enjoy the show.
Cesar, thank you very much for the phone call, and enjoy the final with Real Madrid. All right, Jan, so quickly, do we give Zinedine Zidane enough credit for what he's done at Real Madrid?
I don't think we do. He's a very humble and quiet guy, and you don't see him much on the sideline. But, you know, I still question his... I don't want to say that I could coach a team with those kind of players.
No, but, don't say that, please.
But I'm just saying that he knows how to keep, from his own experience, he knows how to keep stars hit level, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, look, you guys just talked about how well Conte... we'll go back to this in a minute. You guys just talked about how well Conte was as a man manager. I think we got to give Zidane. I mean, he's dealing with some of the biggest stars in the world.
Yeah.
But what Allegri... They're going for the triple, and they've won the domestic league, they've won the Italian Cup, and now they're going for the triple. If that's not a fantastic season, I don't know what is, you know?
Yeah, this is the final that's got the makings of everything. Is the super manager too big of a thing now, Eddie?
No.
Is there too much attention on managers in world football?
No, I don't think so.
No?
Not with the rise in social media and the attention that these players get and how big their egos become, it's become all the more important to be a man manager and be able to deal with these guys on an everyday basis, whether they're injured, whether they're playing, whether they're not playing, whether they're a sub. That's huge, and that's so important.
But I'm saying, like in the case of Manchester United, because they knew City had hired Pep Guardiola, do you think, without a doubt, Manchester United has to get a big-name manager and has to satisfy that sort of – that celebrity side of things?
I do, especially after David Moyes, because he wasn't big enough to fill that role. And big shoes to fill after Alex Ferguson. But I agree with Eddie. We have strong players, we have great players, and now I think players have much more power in the game, and rightly so. But I think you have to match them with a good manager too, and you need strong, effective managers. And Conte's a great example. I think Allegri, great example.
Mm-hmm. So you know, let me go relative to Major League Soccer. It interests me more when I see Patrick Vieira coaching New York City FC trying to navigate Major League Soccer, salary caps, working with varying levels of talent based on where he has come from as a player. That interests me. Does that interest you?
Yeah, because that's a challenge. That is a challenge that's on a complete different level than these guys are working with. He has to work with players who make $35,000 a year, and he has to work with players who make $5 million a year. How do you bring all that together? And all the rules and in and outs and MLS. No, I have a lot of respect for that he took that challenge.
And he's not just a manager. He also has to be a coach. The kids that come out of college aren't proficient in tactics and technique and all of these little things. He has to be a teacher.
Yeah, right.
What about if Guillermo Barros-Schelotto comes to LAFC? See, I think Tata Martino also in Atlanta. I think this spices up our league, don't you, Ken?
I do. I think so. But again, the Vieira, the players he's worked with and played with were some of the best in the world. So the adjustment he has to make to a lower level standard, because MLS isn't.
And you don't mean that. I know you don't mean that disrespectfully.
I mean as the compliment to Vieira, to be able to adjust his temperament and deal with that. It's tremendous, Glenn. You know, it's a tribute to him.
All right, so before we go to break here, I just want to quickly go around the table. So, Real Madrid or Juventus, Eddie?
Juventus 3-1. Late
goal. Juventus 3-1.
Juventus 2-0.
Juventus.
Juventus 2-1.
Wow.
And what, sorry, do you say, Glenn? What do you say, Glenn?
I'm picking Juventus as sorry, well. Sorry. I think it's – no.
Sorry to our callers.
I just think collectively, I think this is going to be a differing challenge for Real Madrid. I think they've got the better goalkeeper in the department with Buffon. I think it's Buffon's time. I want to see from a heart standpoint.
Yeah, I do.
I would love to see that guy win it because I just think he's been such an incredible player for the game. But also went down in the lower divisions with Juventus, did not leave.
Sure.
And help them get back to the Serie A after the corruption probe and all that. So that's it. Victor, what about you? Who are you picking? Real Madrid or Juventus? Juve too? I think you looked at all four of us. And so we got five here for Juventus.
We got five for Toronto versus Columbus tonight too.
All right. We're going to take a break here. We're going to come back. Steve Nichol interview is coming up next. I want to thank Jan Christensen, Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture. Big Memorial Day weekend sale, DanishInspirations.com. Ken Fogarty. Ken, thanks for making the run in.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
One of the all-time greats here in Houston, helping mold our youth players as well. And, of course, my good friend, Mr. Eddie Robinson, who loves a hamburger and is doing a great job as an analyst, super center back with the Dynamo.
I like bacon, too. Don't just put hamburgers
bacon
on me.
Bacon, too. And your girlfriend Sandy's over there smiling ear to ear. All right, we'll take a break here. We're leaving with Soundgarden, RIP Chris Cornell. And a quick reminder here, for the Daspit Law Firm, John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They bring a personalized approach. DaspitLaw.com. Daspit Law Firm, working for you 24/7 nights and weekend. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. We'll take a break.
ESPN 97.5. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
Andre Onana setting his defensive unit up. Smalling again, winning the header, the flick! And Mkhitaryan's got his sixth Europa League goal of the season, and Manchester United have doubled the lead! 2-0!
Hey, soccer fans, don't forget, the real soccer pub in Edo is the King's Court right next to the stadium at 903 Hutchins, on the corner of Walker and Hutchins. Now, they've got 13 TVs there at the King's Court. They show it all. Premier League, Champions League, MLS, La Liga, you name it, they have it. They have 24 taps, a full bar, an extensive selection of spirits, plus tremendous pub food there. Get over to King's Court. It's a great place to go pre-Dynamo and post-Dynamo matches. They've got the rooftop deck, El Bateon parties in there, and they got a great patio that sits in the shadows of BBVA Compass Stadium. Say hello to Jay at King's Court, kingscourttexas.com. Now, upcoming here in Houston on June 3rd, as we all know, it's the Champions League final between Real Madrid and Juventus. There's a wonderful party going to go on downtown called the Heineken's Champions League Final Party. Brian Ching is going to be there, a number of notables down there. But there's going to be one guy in there that has done a few things that nobody has done in there, and that is win the European Cup, which is now called the Champions League. This is a party on June 3rd. His name, well, he's the former Liverpool legend Steve Nichol, and he joins us now. Steve, thank you very much for coming on.
Hey, Glenn.
You know, I go around town in Houston, and you know what I tell people? I say, hey, I called a Liverpool game with Steve Nichol. Gets me in the door anywhere, gets me instant respect.
Good, man. Hey, if it gets you a pint as well, then I'm all for that.
Well, let's, because we got a lot of Liverpool fans here in Houston. We have a big supporters group here. Let's first get kind of a synopsis on the season under Jurgen Klopp this year with Liverpool.
I think initially, first half of the season, they actually duped us all into thinking they actually may have a chance of winning the Premier League. The form was that good. They had as tough a start as anybody in the Championship. One that we all thought, certainly Liverpool fans thought, you know, it's sink or swim. If we start horrible, then it could be a long season. But, of course, as we know now, Liverpool absolutely on fire, steamrolling anybody and everybody, particularly the top clubs. And as I said earlier, they kind of duped us into thinking that maybe there was a chance we could win the title. But from Christmas on, we've kind of leveled off to somewhere that we didn't want to be, and find ourselves scrambling now with one game to go, albeit should be an easy one against Middlesbrough to get in the top four.
Steve Nicol joining us here, played in two European Cup finals, winning it in 1984. They beat Roma in the Olympic Stadium, 70,000. We're going to get to that in a minute, but right now we're talking Liverpool. What do you think Liverpool's manager, Jurgen Klopp, sort of has learned here now since his time in the Premier League, and maybe some differences between that and the Bundesliga?
To be honest, I actually read an article that kind of he summed up what he had learned, which I kind of think he's right. You know, he was taken aback at the intensity week in and week out of every single game in the Premier League. There is no easy games, regardless of who you're playing against, whether it's the top team, whether it's the bottom team. Nobody gives less than 100%. Obviously, the amount of games. And so all of these things really fatigue your players, both physically and mentally. And I'm sure he realizes now that he didn't have a squad big enough with enough quality to cope with that, which is probably part of the reason why, you know, the second part of the season, Liverpool have struggled going to lesser clubs, because that's when you need to be able to show how good you are, and you need to be mentally in tip-top shape to go to a place, the likes of Stoke, where, you know, historically, it's always a tough place to go and play and enjoy yourself. You know, the best teams do that, regardless of where they are, and Liverpool struggled to do that. But again, I think a lot of it was down to the length of the Premier League season, how physically and mentally draining it is, and I think he will be prepared, and I think we'll see how prepared he is by what he does in the summer.
Steve Nicol joining us, the former Liverpool legend, also a great manager in Major League Soccer with the New England Revolution. I remember the day you and I called that game out of a studio. It was a preseason game. It was Milan and Liverpool, and I think one of our talking points was, did Liverpool buy enough? And obviously, I think that's some type of question that's really never left and continues to hang over them. What are their biggest needs? Is it still a left back? What is their biggest needs?
For me, I think they need a proper centre forward. I think they need a recognised centre forward, a guy who's been there, done it, who will just play centre forward. You know, Klopp seems to like three forwards who will intermingle, who sometimes will be wide, sometimes will be in the middle. I'm not a huge fan of that. I think if you look at Lewandowski when he was at Dortmund, the fact that he had a real centre forward, he was one of the main reasons that Dortmund did so well. So I'm kind of a little surprised that he didn't go along that route. At the same time, he didn't really have a recognised centre forward. You know, Daniel Sturridge, who I would say is the only one he had, was never fit. So maybe he didn't have a lot of choice. He had to play three guys that sort of interchange with each other. So definitely a centre forward, definitely a centre forward that scores goals. But the truth is, right up the spine of the team needs a real injection. We need a goalkeeper we can trust. As good as Mignolet's been probably the last dozen games, we can't really trust him. I think we need a centre forward we can trust. You know, Lovren signed a new deal. He's a guy you just can't trust. You don't know what you're going to get. And I think in the middle of the park, we have horses. You know, we have good horses. Chan's a good player. You know what you're getting. Henderson's a good player. You know what you're getting. But we need somebody a little better than that. We need a real figure in there. So you're looking at the spine of the team, to be quite honest.
Steve, speaking of the spine of the team, I noticed last week against Stoke, they went into a five-man midfield and played with three backs. Tell me a little bit about why you think he did that. Is that essentially just kind of answering your question, just to add more players in midfield and add to the quality in that area of the field?
I always think a 3-5-2 is a lot more attacking, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And it's a gutsy move to go there and attack. So I guess if you're a team that defensively is not, it's not your forte, then why not go and attack? I would hope that's the reason he did it. It certainly worked, but again, I'm not sure that the personnel is there to play that three consistently in the Premier League. If he can find a couple of good defenders that he could rely on, that we could all rely on, that we all know what we're getting, who just don't make crazy mistakes from nowhere, then yes, you can play three. That gives you more men going forward for me. So it'll be interesting to see what he does at the weekend against Middlesbrough.
Steve Nichol joining us here. You see him on ESPN FC with all our great friends up there, Craig Burley and Alejandro Moreno and others. You know, you're seeing these giant numbers that they're saying they're going to splash out money-wise in the transfer window. You believe in it?
Not really. I mean, there was reports yesterday that they offered $75 million for Mbappe. $75 million is never going to get Mbappe for a start. but I guess if you're a supporter, it's good that they're talking those numbers. I'm a little surprised. I don't believe Liverpool are going to go out and spend that kind of money on a player. Mbappe is a real one-off. You know, he's a guy that maybe, if Liverpool think he's worth 75 now, they're probably thinking 2 or 3 years down the line it's going to be 120, 30. But I think teams are going to pay that already. So I'm not sure if you're a Liverpool fan, you think that they're going to go out and buy 3 or 4 players at that amount of money. I'm actually surprised they offered that kind of money for a player. I don't think they're fishing in that pond at all. I think they're fishing in the same pond as how Coutinho came to Liverpool, how Mane came, how Lallana came. You know, you're talking 30, 35 million. Try and bring these guys on and then maybe down the line sell them for double the money. So I think that's where Liverpool are fishing at the moment.
Steve, have we lost some of the authenticity in the game? In other words, I'm listening to you talk about this money for Mbappe, right? And I'm thinking about you back when you played, and I'm going, well, they weren't making that kind of money. Do you think it's a totally different world now, and is it a bit mind-boggling to you? And have we lost some of the authenticity of the players like the Steve Nichols and the Graham Soonises and the Kenny Dalglishes?
I think there's no question. There's a different, it's a different attitude towards things nowadays. The biggest one being everything has to be instant. You know, nobody anymore gets an opportunity to gain experience and to learn by playing. You know, particularly in the Premier League, it's all about the here and now. And your players, I don't think they have that. I don't think they have the same hunger that players used to have. There's no question that money softens players up, and when you get a lot of it too early, I think it takes the edge off you. So, yeah, it's a completely different game. But I think more importantly, the way the game's played now, I don't think is as exciting as it was. I was at Anfield for the opening of the new stand, the game against Leicester. And before that, it had been a while since I'd been, and people were talking to me about how, you know, there's not such a great atmosphere for the whole game, and I was trying to figure it out. Well, I figured it out because too many times, not just Liverpool, but other teams, they make their way up to the edge of the opposition penalty box, and the ball finishes back at the halfway line. Now, you can't expect your fans to get excited about playing a pass from the edge of the opposition box back to the halfway line. I don't care how drunk you are. You're still not going to find that fun. So, yeah, there's definitely been huge changes in the game, both on and off the field.
Should you know, you're a commentator now. You're what they call it in England, a pundit. You're someone whose opinion is very valued based on your experiences and all your expertise. Should fans be disappointed? Let's put this to MLS here. Should fans be disappointed when teams are sitting back at home in Major League Soccer? I think so, because I've totally shifted now to I want to be entertained. And I don't think anybody wants to come to a game in the summer with a team sitting on their 18-yard box.
No, that's not why we start. That's not why we all started playing the game. It's not why we watch the game. No question. It's harder to make chances and score goals. But my goodness, you know, you should only be sitting at the top of your box and defending. If you're playing against a team that is clearly a mile ahead of you, then, you know, it's a professional game. You have to do what you have to do. But MLS, there's so much parity in MLS that there shouldn't be any team at all, particularly at home, thinking about sitting on the edge of the box. It doesn't make sense. There is no reason to do it in MLS for sure. So I don't understand why teams do that.
Steve, last one on MLS, and then I'm going to switch it to the European Cup, and then we know you have work to do. So we're here in Houston, right? And they've kind of revamped it. I know you've seen the dynamo and the changes under Wilmer Cabrera. They're 6-0-1 at home. They intended to get a better home record here this year, but they've had monumental struggles on the road. They've never been able to, apart from one half in Portland, really come out of the locker room looking alive and carrying over that effervescence and energy and cavalier spirit that they have at home onto the road. Now, you having been a guy that was so successful as a manager in MLS, why is the road so difficult in this league? I know it's difficult everywhere, but why is it so difficult in this league for the Dynamo to recapture that home spirit and take it on the road?
I don't think there's another league in the world that week to week you play in a completely different environment, whether it's the amount of fans, whether it's the type of field you play on, whether it's at altitude, you know, whether it's 50 degrees or 90 degrees. There are so many changes from game to game that players in MLS have to deal with that nobody else deals with. So, you know, if you add that to the obvious thing that every team and every league has, that going away from home is always hard, then you end up getting what you get in MLS. It really is unique, there's no question. And it's hard to explain to anybody unless you actually do it. You go from New England in March to California. I mean, it's like going from the Earth and landing on the moon as far as the weather's concerned. So, I mean, nobody else in the world deals with that.
All right, I'm going to switch you, Steve, to the 1984 European Cup. You guys go to the Olympic Stadium in Rome, and it's Roma's home stadium. You beat the Italians in penalty kicks. Just some of your thoughts on that day, and as you kind of look back now in your career at that moment, that significant moment that's a rarity for any player, what runs through your mind?
I think the first thing, obviously, is not being scared to go there. We had such a winning mentality that regardless of who we were playing or where we were playing them, we always felt we were better than everybody. We always felt that even on a bad day, we had players that could win the game for us, and on a good day, we'd smash anybody. You had the atmosphere, the caveat of actually going to their home and upsetting them. And then when you step out just before the game and you're away from home and there's, 35,000 of your fans there, I mean, it's an incredible sight and an incredible noise. Obviously winning, you know, we win dramatically on penalties. You know, for me, it's kind of up and down. I came on in the game with half an hour to go. I had an opportunity to score, didn't take it. We go into extra time, we go to penalties. I miss the first penalty, and we end up winning. I mean, if there was ever a game summed up what goes through or what happens to a player in football, that was it. You know, you're up, you're down, and it's how you cope with it. And as I said, the biggest thing is for us to have that mentality. Can you imagine today a team going to Juventus to win the Champions League final at Juventus, them being at home? I mean, it seems unthinkable that any team could do that, even today. So the fact is we did it. But the reason we did it is because of the mentality we had and, obviously, the quality.
And then a year later, you get to the final again, and this is a totally different part of your career. And I know you've talked about this with me, and this was a game that prior to the game in Brussels, Belgium, at the Heysel Stadium, I think it was 39 people were killed. There was a whole bunch of stuff going on before the game. It was horrible. Juventus would ultimately win the game 1-0, but I think I remember you telling me in a prior interview we did that you hardly, I mean, you couldn't focus on the game, obviously.
No, nobody could. Nobody did. You know, we. It's funny, we had Dortmund against Monaco recently, and, you know, there was a lot of complaints that, you know, the Dortmund players were made to play the game the day after somebody planted a bomb at the beside their boss. Well, we had to play a game 3 hours after 39 people died at Heysel. And so you can imagine there was no atmosphere. It was a case of get this game over with. Under no circumstances were we going to win the game or could we win the game. And quite frankly, we didn't care. All we wanted to do was get back, make sure our family and our wives at the game were okay and get home. So it was a complete non-event. And the goal that we lost kind of summed up the whole thing. It was a penalty was given, a so-called foul, maybe 5 yards outside the box. And nobody complained. We certainly didn't complain. We knew that we just weren't going to win under any circumstances. And to be fair, the Juventus players were exactly in the same boat as us. They just wanted to get home and get away. And so that's kind of what happened.
Steve, did you know your family was okay? I mean, when you guys went on the field, were you guys able to make contact with family members?
We knew that basically it was our wives, most of us. Mm-hmm. We knew that they were in the stand. We knew that they were under a lot of pressure from everybody around them, because all of a sudden anybody with red or from Liverpool was an obvious target. So it was a very scary period. And as I said, the only thing we wanted to do was make sure everybody was okay, get them on the bus, and let's get away and get home.
Well, Steve, thank you for going into that. I'm sure that's not fun to dredge that one up, but it is a part of history. And talk about two very differing European Cup finals for you. Just a word on the Real Madrid and Juventus before I let you go, and how you see this one playing out. And obviously, it's a great matchup between a great Spanish team and an Italian team.
Yeah, up until probably the semi-final, I pretty much had Real Madrid as favourites. But then, having watched Barcelona, you know, demolishing Barcelona, and then giving Monaco as good an attacking side as there is in world football right now, giving them not even a kick, I think Juventus are favourites. I don't think there's another team that are as good from back, middle to front as they are. You know, you can argue that Real Madrid going forward are pretty special with the likes of Ronaldo. You know, whether Bale's going to be fit, we don't know. But they've got a lot of match winners. No question, Real Madrid defensively can be got at. And I think that changes, and that's why I have Juventus as favourites, because defensively, they're outstanding. They are the best defensive team in the world, no question. And they have the capability going forward to hurt you badly. Little Dybala is fantastic. Higuain, you know, Mandzukic, who's a centre-forward, has been playing on a wide left role, not only defender, but getting forward and scoring goals. So I just think Juventus, from back, middle to front, they're flawed. I don't think they really have an Achilles heel. But Real Madrid, I think their Achilles heel is defensively, and that's why I think Juventus are favourites going into it.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for, number one, all your time here. Great insight on everything. I also want to thank you. We're looking forward to seeing you come down to Houston here on June 3rd for the event. But until then, thanks again. And as we get closer to the match, maybe we'll get you in and we'll break it down even more.
No bother. Thanks, man.
All right. He's the best. He's Steve Nichol, and we appreciate him coming on. What a career he had. By the way, won a few first division titles in England with Liverpool, too, but we'll talk a little bit more about that. Heineken Champions League final party. It's at the Warehouse Live, 813 St. Emmanuel Street, put together by Brian Ching, Saturday, June 3rd, 2017. That'll wrap it up for tonight. Before we go, you want an Irish pub with that Irish feel, then the Gorgeous Gale is the place for you. By the way, that's where the Liverpool supporters hang out, so that's why we're tagging it on the back of Steve's interview. Soccer fans, head over to the Gorgeous Gale, 5555 Morningside Drive. Catch all the best soccer and football matches there. Stop in for a pint and a bite. They've also got a great whiskey offering over there. Say hello to Peter. Open field, lots of monitors, outdoor patio, the Gorgeous Gale, the place to be, thegorgeousgale.com. That does it for tonight. For all of you, for the one and only Tyler Scott, podcastarena.com and iTunes is where you get the podcast of this show. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Good night.
This is Ed Too Tall Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.